What did you say? Did you say it was a podcast of the cinema?
I did say it's a podcast of the cinema. Said. Yes.
I was intentionally trying to make you laugh during the opening theme music, and I win. I win again.
Well, it's you turn life.
And not only do I win, but I fulfill for yet another day the marriage vow.
Yes.
The marriage vow in the actual wedding ceremony was, do you promise to love, respect, and amuse each other?
I think honor and trust were in there, too.
Sure. We've broken both of those.
Oh, please. I like that we threw in trust. It was my little shout-out to Hal Hartley.
I know. We have not broken them.
You're Dave
White.
What's
your name? Who?
You are Dave White, and I'm Alonzo Duraldi. And this is Linoleum Knife.
You're a film critic for The Wrap. You're the boss of film critics for The Wrap. You're the film critic. You're the film reviews editor.
Yes.
You are the co-host of Who Shot You?
Yes.
On the Maximum Fun Network. You are the co-host of Breakfast All Day, formerly known as What the Flick. Mm-hmm. Stop complaining about it. not you, but listeners. You know who you are.
If they're listening to us, they know the drill by now.
And
go check out our Patreon.
Who's Patreon?
Breakfast All Day.
Oh, that's right. Y'all started a Patreon.
Yes.
Yeah. So that Christy can pay for the hosting.
Yeah,
stuff.
She's had to, like, there's been some out of pocket for her, and didn't want to.
Absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I need to. Okay. We need to settle a very important argument.
Oh.
Is it Mr. Vane? Is it the rhythm of the night? Or is it I'm gonna get you, baby?
I think we decided most definitively that it's I'm gonna get you, baby.
I don't know that we did, because here's the thing. When I'm with you, I don't hear Corona's The Rhythm of the Night much.
Uh-huh.
I hear Mr. Vane way too much. I also hear Mr. Vane is by Culture Beat.
Mm-hmm.
Rhythm of the Night is by Corona.
Yes.
I'm Gonna Get You, Baby is by Bizarre Inc.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does Dreams fall in this category, or is that too, like...
That's Gabrielle. She's a real singer.
That's too R&B. Okay.
So, leave her out of it for
okay,
now.
Okay, just checking.
I guess we take Rhythm of the Night out of the equation for your purposes.
Yes.
Although, if I have to pick between Rhythm of the Night and Mr. Vane, I know what I'm going for.
Okay, but is
Rhythm of the Night is a better song.
Are you judging Rhythm of the Night solely on its merits, or because of its appearance in a film that you love?
No. No, okay. But solely on its merits.
Okay.
It makes the most sense.
Sure.
Okay. Like, lyrically, it makes the most sense. Both of them...
It's pretty straightforward.
Both Mr. Vane and Rhythm of the Night are absolute ESL jams. Like, someone in...
Norway.
Europa wrote these songs.
Oceania.
And translated them into English... Maybe.
Like they
just wrote English words that sounded cool in Dutch.
If they weren't composed for Eurovision, they could have.
Correct. And so, Rhythm of the Night is a more efficient and meaningful song melodically.
It does cut
lyrically
to the chase. Yes. I will grant you.
Mr. Vane is... Who knows what it's about?
You got me.
We don't know what Mr. Vane is about. Rhythm of the Night is about this is the rhythm of the night.
Yes.
That's
A
it.
Is A.
Yes. And so, however, I think you are correct. I know your favorite of all of these is I'm Gonna Get You.
Yes.
I think it's the best. Uh-huh. Not just because it makes sense lyrically.
Yo, DJ, pump this party.
But because it's a breakbeat track.
Yes.
Which made it really of its moment. Those other two are sort of like high energy holdovers that could have been released, honestly, in the 80s.
Yes.
I'm Gonna Get You, Baby was like straight up, this is the 90s now, you guys. Yes,
the now sound.
This is the now sound of the 90s.
Of the 90s.
Listen to this breakbeat underneath. That's how you know it's right now in the 90s. We will be returning to this topic.
It is actually relevant this week.
In the conversation of cinema later. Because we're going to revisit an institution that we began and then kind of discarded for a while.
Yeah, we've only done it a couple times. Not
because
we wanted
to discard it, but because there are only 24 hours in a day.
Uh-huh.
But we used to do a thing. When I say we used to do
this
thing,
is the third time we've ever done it.
Yes.
But we've talked about it forever.
We've talked about it forever. We've done it twice. This will now make the third time we've done the thing that we like to call Make Me.
Yes.
And we'll get back to it in a bit.
Yeah.
But right now,
the big news.
The current cinema. Oh, wait, there's big news?
Well.
What's the big news?
Bibi Anderson died.
She did.
Yes.
Yes, she did.
One of Ingmar Bergman's go-to actresses.
Uh-huh.
She starred in Persona. She starred in Seventh Seal and Wild Strawberries.
Yep.
Legendary Swedish actress.
She was 83.
Yeah. You know, part of that generation of particularly European, but, you know, American as well. I think actresses who were sort of present for a big shift in the cinema, but and also in what cinema acting looked like.
Right.
You know, so like your Catherine Deneuve's, your Jean Moreau's, you know, people who were there for that period of, you know, maybe kind of less presentational and more, what am I trying to say here?
The kind of people that you would see doing things in the 70s that seemed real.
Yes.
Like they were...
It felt in the moment.
Method is maybe the wrong way to describe what they did, but
no, because they're post-method in a way.
But they were absolutely that gritty 70s realism.
Yeah. Julie Christie.
Right.
You know, so yeah. So Bibi Anderson, very much in that.
She had a couple of moments in American film in the 70s.
Yes.
Promised You a Rose Garden.
Ooh, she's in that? Okay. She's in some westerns, I think, right?
She's also in the Concorde Airport 79.
Ooh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
Who isn't in the Concorde Airport 79? Who is she in Babette's Feast? Is she one of the sisters?
I guess.
Wow.
She was in Robert Altman's Quintet.
Oh, yes, she was.
Yeah.
That's a bonkers movie.
She's in a lot of stuff, you guys.
In Babette's Feast, she plays Swedish lady-in-waiting.
Okay.
So I think that's probably a cameo. Like
face cameo.
Yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
I don't remember her being in it.
I do not either.
Yeah.
Ooh, Quintet.
There.
Like, Altman is one of my favorite directors, but Altman that doesn't work is singularly bizarre.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, Beyond Therapy or O.C. and Stigs.
Okay, we're off topic.
Okay,
now.
Sorry. Bibi Anderson, R.I.P., you were awesome. We're not talking about Star Wars because we don't care about Star Wars.
Why would we be talking about Star Wars?
Because there was that thing this week.
What thing?
I love your bubble. There was a thing this week called Star Wars Celebration.
What happened?
And
where was this?
It was, I don't even know. But it was basically one of...
I have that. Listen, I have Star Wars blocked on Twitter.
Wise move.
Like, if the words Star Wars are in your tweet, I will not see it.
It's one of those events that Disney's becoming the master of that passes for news without actually being news.
Okay.
So basically, they dropped a teaser and they announced the title of Episode 9. And got everybody in the world to go write about it and speculate about it.
What's the name of the new movie?
The Rise of Skywalker.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
That's the question. Here come months of speculation from nerds, so I don't know and I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't.
When is it happening? When's this movie coming out?
I think December.
Oh, so it's this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got nothing against Star Wars.
No, I just really always enjoy
I just
the
don't
Star Wars.
Think about Star Wars between Star Wars movies.
I fully enjoy it.
When I'm not physically in the act of watching a Star Wars movie and then writing a review or talking about it,
right.
I'm done thinking
it
about
occupies
it.
0% of my life in between releases of films.
You know, they talked
and
about
this. This is why when you go on Schmodown, you always get kicked off.
Probably,
in
yes.
5 minutes.
It's true.
Yeah.
I do not have, like, encyclopedic knowledge of who did the scores for
you
all the Marvel
no
movies.
You are no William the Beast Bibiani.
I am not. It's
That's
true.
For sure.
That is why I am an also-ran at best in Schmodown world. But, you know, they're lovely people.
Yeah, so I didn't know, was, like, how many days did this...
I have no idea.
Did this felt, press event
It felt like it happened
place?
All month this week on my Twitter feed. It was just like, You know, this was following the giant Avengers event, at which point none of the press had seen the movie and none of the people in the movie could talk about how the movie ends or most of what even happens in the movie. So it was like, why are any of you in this room?
No. Money.
Yeah.
Money. Money. Money.
Money and clicks.
So let's talk about some of the current cinema.
Sure.
I need to make a deal with you. You and I, together, we got a date. We got a date. You and me, we're going to go see a movie called After.
God, all right, fine.
I didn't know, speaking of bubbles, I didn't know this even existed until 48 hours ago.
I knew it was a film that was opening that I had assigned that the critic then said, I have to go see this on Thursday night because they're not showing it to the press.
William the Beast Bibiani told me all about it. He said, it's based on One Direction fan fiction.
Correct.
That apparently became books.
Yes.
Oh my. Oh my.
Well, look, people are like looking for the next 50 Shades, you know.
Well, okay.
You know that started as Twilight fan
fiction. No, I know. 50 Shades was Twilight fan fiction. I need to know something. If this is One Direction fan fiction, is it about dudes in a boy band falling in love with each other and boning?
No.
Well, then what is it then?
It's about falling in love with your college classmate who happens to be Harry Styles, I think, but not in the movie anymore. He's just a guy with good hair.
He's not a pop star?
No.
Well, then what part of it is the One Direction fan fiction?
I don't know.
Explain it to me, please.
You got me.
Well, now I don't know if I want to go.
If you go,
I have these ideas in my head that don't seem to be working out.
If you read Robert Abele's review of The Wrap, this just sounds like garden variety crappy, not like legendarily awful. You were expecting it to be like The Identical or something.
Well, when the bar has been raised so high, like The Identical.
Yes.
But what I'm looking for is what's already in my head. My own fan fiction. Listen, I know somebody in real life who writes gay Top Chef fan fiction. And I've read some of it. And it's hilarious. And so I think that if you're going to make a movie about One Direction fan fiction, it needs to be bonkers.
Well, ideally. You know, it's funny. I just opened...
These weren't self-published books? Like, they were published
I think they were published, yeah.
By, like,
by
a real...
Like a real, you know.
Oh, good.
I think it's funny.
The publishing industry is great.
Well, they'll take whatever they can get. I just opened my Netflix app on my phone to see if The Identical was still streaming on Netflix.
Yes.
Only to be told your monthly price is increasing to $15.99 on May 8th.
That is what's going to happen.
Wow. They
did
really
you not know about that?
I did not.
Oh, they already sent me the email.
They really know how to respond to the launch of Disney Plus.
Yes.
Which is the other thing we heard a million things about this week.
I did hear about that. And the minute I started hearing about it, like there was like a 3-hour chunk on Twitter where everything was about Disney Plus.
Mm.
And I thought, well, I guess I'm going to block Disney Plus now too. Because I don't have time for this.
Oh,
I don't have time for this stuff. Here's what we're going to do.
The Identical is no longer on Netflix.
Damn Boo. It. Here's what we're going to do. When Disney Plus starts, we're going to... what's $6.99 a month, you said?
I think so, yeah.
We're going to have it for like 2 months. We're going to watch all the classic animated features just to get our like fix on that.
Oh, and
you can see some Dexter Riley stuff.
I was saying, the Boatniks.
The Boatniks, whatever. You know, Super Dad.
That's awful.
Listen, you respect the memory of Bob Crane. You do that right now.
It is interesting to watch him in Disney movies.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure is.
There's one Disney Plus.
Enough time to watch, you know, like Bambi and whatever.
There is. I do want to see Noel, which is the movie with Anna.
Of course you do, I know.
Anna Kendrick and Billy Eichner.
It's your job. It's your thing. I know.
It might actually be good.
Maybe.
Maybe.
You'll report on that.
I will.
Yeah. And then we're getting rid of it. We're not keeping it. This will be like 2 movie tickets, gun through as much as we want, then bail.
You're not going to get hooked on the Loki TV show?
What's that?
It's a TV show about Loki.
Starring?
Tom Hiddleston.
I'm sorry. Tom Hiddleston is going to be in a TV show for Disney Plus about Loki?
Yeah.
Is Taika Waititi going to play? Is he directing it and writing it?
I don't think so.
Well, then I'm not watching it. That's the only Loki show I'm watching.
What Loki does in the shadows.
Whatever. If anything that they do with Avengers on television, if it's not made by the Thor Ragnarok people, and specifically Taika Waititi, again, ain't nobody got time for that.
There's a Vision and Scarlet Witch show, there's a Loki show, and there's a The Falcon and the Winter Soldier show.
Not interested. No. You get me some straight up comedy people in this. And then we might could talk.
In a 30-minute.
Yeah, 30-minute show. A sitcom. A Loki sitcom.
Yes. Loki is filmed before a live studio audience.
Yes. That? That I will watch. Loki's like the bumbling dad.
Hey, everybody.
That's what that's... Otherwise, no. I've still never watched The Wire. I can't with this other stuff.
Fair enough.
Too many things.
Yes.
What did we see this week that was a major... We have not seen Hellboy.
Nope.
I don't want to go see Hellboy. I'm going to say it again. William the Beast Bibbiani is the lone outlier in my life, anyway.
He reviewed it for the Wrap and
loved Hellboy.
Big fan of Hellboy.
And when I talked to him last, he goes, "Don't you remember the first time you saw Speed Racer and you came out of the theater and you tried to tell everyone how great Speed Racer was?" I said, "Yes, I do remember that." He said, "And now you feel vindicated, right?" I go, "Yes, I do feel vindicated now." He goes, "Well, that's how people are going to be about Hellboy in about 5 to 10 years. I said, "Maybe."
So Bibbs is a Cassandra here.
I can't trust you for everything.
Yeah, I never saw the movie with the buildings rolling around either.
Which one was that?
Mortal Engines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which he was also a fan of.
Yeah.
Didn't see it.
Sometimes he and I, our paths diverge.
We don't always agree.
In the woods.
And he would say the same for me.
Maybe I'll give it a shot when it's on the free television.
On the TV?
Yeah. And we got to get out to see Missing Link. this week because I like a Leica. And
I like some Leica.
I'm pretty much down for most of the Leicas.
I was not super into either the Box Trolls or Kubo, so I've been a little cooler toward them lately, but it's worth a look, yes. But we need to see Peterloo.
We did see Little. Let's stop talking about what we haven't done and all of our many failures.
Let's not bicker and argue over who killed who.
We saw Little.
We did.
It's a new film from director Tina Gordon, who made Peoples.
Yeah, which I liked.
I seem to remember mostly liking Peoples.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Good Craig Robinson performance, if I recall.
And she co-wrote it with Tracy Oliver, who was one of the screenwriters of Girls Trip.
Yes.
This is a body-switching movie,
mm-hmm.
and here's what it is about. 17 competing things.
Yes.
But we'll get to that in a minute. Regina Hall plays the CEO of a tech company where she isn't just Miranda Priestley. She's feared by all.
Yeah.
And not because of her quietly withering monologues about Blue.
She's more of a screamer.
But because she is actively abusive, screaming, violent, she hits people, and she viciously insults anyone and everyone who crosses her path, whether they work for her or not.
Yeah.
Like, in life, she is this person, not just in business. Flashback to her childhood. She was bullied. She was picked on. She was smarter than everybody else. And what she learned from that, her takeaway from that was, I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be successful and I'm going to be the bully.
Yeah. I'm going to make everyone pay.
I'm going to make everybody pay. Issa Rae from Insecure is her assistant who has a degree from, I think, MIT or Caltech. I can't remember now which one it is. But you see her diploma at the very beginning of the movie.
I think it's Caltech.
It might be Caltech. And she's been working for her for like 2 years. She wants to be something more than an assistant. She wants to be a creative person on the staff. But she's not. And she's at her wit's end with Regina Hall. So people are being abused left and right. And Regina Hall crosses the path of a little girl who's, you know, playing around at being Harry Potter, basically. And she has a little wand.
It's more like, what do they call it? Close-up magic? What is it?
I don't know. She's doing magic tricks, but she's also got a magic wand.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's doing the Hermione thing.
She's got the Harry Blackstone kit.
Waves the wand at Regina Bell.
Hall.
Because she... Regina... Did I say Regina Bell?
Yes.
Oh, the singer.
Yeah.
Regina Bell, the singer. Different.
Yes.
Different person. Regina Bell, the singer, sang Whole Wide World or Whole New World from Aladdin back in the 90s.
Did she?
She did.
Okay.
Yeah. She's a great singer who never got her due. But she's in my head a lot, which is why she just came out of my mouth.
Waves the wand at Regina
Hall. And then, and says, I wish you were little. The next day, Regina Hall wakes up. She's Marseille Martin from Black-ish.
And she's looking exactly the way she did when she was in junior high.
Looking exactly the way she did. So then Regina Hall is largely out of the film.
Yes.
Until the very end. And what we have now is
a reverse big.
With two wonderful performances by Issa Rae and Marseille Martin.
Yeah.
Especially when they are together.
Yes.
They are funny. And they have this great antagonistic chemistry together. I do not watch Black-ish. But this child makes me want to go back and start watching Black-ish. Mm. Because she's...
a movie star.
A movie star. She's got this expressive face, this intelligence of knowing how to communicate things with a cocked eyebrow. Like, it's...
She's
a frighteningly talented child.
And she is completely convincing as a, 38-year-old woman in a 13-year-old's body.
She carries herself like she is a furious 38-year-old.
Yeah. In the same way...
A life experience that she could not possibly know about being approximately 14 in real life.
She is doing as well, but the exact opposite of what Zachary Levi is doing in Shazam.
Yeah.
Where he's giving himself the sort of weird gangly body language of a 14-year-old in this big strapping body. She is...
this commanding person.
Yes. She is
stalking through scenes and...
she
and
is the CEO in this little teenage body. Lives.
Issa Rae has also movie star all over her.
Oh, totally.
Even though she's already a TV star. Impeccable comic timing.
Yes.
And I want more from her in films. And I wish that these performances were the whole story.
Yes.
Because this movie is an absolute mess.
Yes. And because it's so exciting that we're getting this comedy that is all about Black women and that they are center stage and they are, you know, they're running the table. This is a movie about them and offering platforms for these great performances. But the script is a shambles.
It feels like a script that was meddled with after Gordon and Oliver finished it. It feels like, you know, even Martin Scorsese has to fight for Final Cut.
And he's got Thelma Schoonmaker.
Yeah. And I see this kind of movie and I think, who took this script away from you? Who took this film away from you? Like, they're letting the performers do their thing, but it's in the service of a script that feels like entire scenes were deleted that would be connective tissue from one plot point to another.
Characters and concepts are introduced and then dropped. Other ones are come back to when it's like, but this isn't what we should be focused on.
Right.
Like, there's this whole subplot where Mikey Day plays this obnoxious billionaire who's the biggest client of the tech firm.
Yeah.
And he's giving them 48 hours to, like, wow him with some new app or he's walking. And so we hit that. So now suddenly there's this whole weird, like, 48-hour ticking clock thing that's laid on top of the now I'm in a little girl's body plot. But then they don't seem to be following it because it seems like it's 3 or 4 days that are happening.
It does happen within the space of 2 days, but it's physically impossible for human beings to accomplish as much as gets accomplished in 2 days and be in as many places as quickly as they can get to in all these places with the outfit changes that it requires. And then there's the subplot where Marseille Martin has to help other kids in school with a talent show, and this takes, like, literally 48 hours, which is also impossible.
Yeah, and the talent show itself is so choppily put together, you don't understand who's on stage, why, and accomplishing what. You've
got a villain that's antagonistic to the kids that Marseille Martin is now helping, only she disappears too.
Yeah, it's...
And as I watched it, I thought, why? Wait, what's happening? How come they aren't, and why are they even here? And, it's dispiriting.
Yes.
To watch wonderful comedy, wonderful comedic performances in a film that doesn't deserve them.
Yeah.
And then there's the joke.
Oh, yes, that too.
And it's not just this joke. It's a collection of them at pretty much the beginning of the movie.
It's when they're establishing Regina Hall's character as a monster.
Regina Hall is the person on camera, and she is a monster, like you just said. And she attacks a variety of people, physically, but also verbally. And one of the things that she does is that she decides to call a child who is her neighbor transgender, even though there is no indication that this is the case. And then it becomes a series of jokes about transitioning that are both cruel and set to establish her as a terrible person. But those jokes are also meant to be funny.
Yeah, like
you're supposed to laugh at the joke, but also know that she's bad. And I don't know how you're supposed to feel about laughing at that joke, even though it's not a funny joke at all.
There's a way to thread that needle where, like, you're establishing a character as being unsympathetic, but then the joke is how other people are responding to this awful person, and not that the what the awful person is saying is the joke.
Right, and she does it again in the next sequence where she's attacking people she works with, including one woman who is fat, and she's just throwing fat stuff at her.
Mm.
But again, you're supposed to kind of think that her fat jokes are funny. And that moment, less the fat jokes, because I'm fat and that stuff just bounces off me anyway and I don't care, but the transgender joke left a really nasty, sour taste in my mouth for the rest of the movie. Because right at that moment, I kind of thought to myself, all right, arms folded. Now, what are you going to do next that's going to be completely offensive?
In your movie about bullying.
Yeah. So, I can't tell people to go see this film. But at the same time, I want to tell people that the two main performances, Issa Rae and
Regina Hall, is fine for what little screen time she gets. It's a little two-dimensional, but
I suppose. I don't know. It's that her character is so toxic that you're kind of happy she's gone when she's not on screen.
True. She's pretty exhausting pretty quickly. Oh, there's a whole other subplot about her boyfriend,
right,
who she keeps at arm's length, right. And then when he sees the girl, thinks that Regina Hall has a secret daughter, and he's trying to be a good dad.
There's a lot going on
here.
What
movie are we in now?
Too many plates are spinning, and they are not spun well. Eventually, if you do see this film, see it from Marseille Martin and Issa Rae.
Yes.
And hope that they get better stuff in the future.
You will see clips of this in their eventual Life Achievement Award reels, but you don't need to see the movie.
Yeah. It bums me out, because I was really excited to see this. That trailer is funny.
It's a funny trailer. It's a funny idea.
And I've seen, and I, you know, I'm trying not to watch trailers, but I'd seen this trailer like three times. And every time I saw it, I would laugh. And I did laugh with those two women.
Right.
And the rest of it is a shambles.
Yeah.
I'm sad to report this.
And I think, I think like it is one of those things where you're thinking like one more pass on that script, more pass in the editing room.
I'm sure the script they wrote was fine. Somebody added and subtracted.
Yeah. Somewhere there's a draft or a cut of this movie that actually makes sense, but not the one they released.
Yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
Her smell.
Yes.
You guys, there's a movie out today. It's called Her Smell.
Yes.
It's playing in New York only right now.
It opens Friday in L.A. and Dallas and
Los Angeles and then other cities.
Yeah.
And, why don't you explain it to everyone?
So it's written and directed by Alex Ross Perry, who is a young filmmaker I like a lot. He did a rather dark comedy called The Color Wheel, and then Listen Up Philip and Queen of Earth. And I have not seen Golden Exits, but I've seen all the other ones. Anyway, this is a film starring Elizabeth Moss, with whom he has worked several times. And she plays a woman named Becky Something, who is the front woman for an all-female band called Something She. And we see in old kind of like home movie footage and stuff that, you know, they've hit the heights. They made the cover of Spin. They've got gold records. They've done all the things that, you know, like every band dreams of accomplishing.
Baby, I'm Sick is the name of their big gold record.
Ah.
An oblique reference.
To Touch Me, I'm Sick?
To Touch Me, I'm Sick. The flashpoint of 90s, grunge.
Yeah.
You know, you could really say Touch Me, I'm Sick is where grunge began, although it did begin earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
That is when...
That
is when things really started to happen. Uh-huh. And that was that moment where everyone thought, oh, Mudhoney's going to be the band.
They were not the band.
They were not the band. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. I saw Mudhoney headline.
Yes.
And the band that opened for them was Soundgarden. you know, Nirvana was on their same level. They were all on Sub Pop at the time. It was the late 80s. And Nirvana was just bubbling up. Mudhoney was going to be it. Mudhoney was what everyone was staking their hitch their wagon to Mudhoney. And Mudhoney's great, and they stuck around forever, and they're still a band, and they still exist, and they become, you know, like grunge dads, you know, like that's who they are.
I seem to recall there's in the Peter Bagg comic book Hate, when a buddy is touring with the grunge band that he's managing, at the beginning of the road trip when they're going on tour, one of them goes, "We are listening but to nothing but this Mudhoney tape for the next week, and anybody who doesn't like it can S my D."
So anyway, Baby We're Sick or Baby I'm Sick or something like that was the fake record in this movie.
So the good times for Something Sheep are in the past. As we meet them, they are falling apart. Most specifically, Becky Something is falling apart. But, you know, like they are playing smaller venues. Their European tour has been canceled.
Yes.
And she is the hottest of hot messes. Alienating bandmates, family members, you know, label people, with, you know, awful behavior and chemical abuse. And the movie is told in sort of five vignettes, basically. And in the first three, Becky is just a nightmare.
Oh, God.
Dave was having PTSD watching this movie.
Like, okay. I know people who know Courtney Love. So I've heard things. And it doesn't even matter that I've heard things that I can't talk about. Because her actions in public.
Yes.
All through these years have been enough to.
This is like Courtney.
To make this movie like almost lawsuit ready.
It's Courtney Love being portrayed by Jenna Rollins in A Woman Under the Influence.
Yeah.
You know, it's that level of.
There's even a character in this movie named Allie Vanderwolf, which, come on. Melissa Auftermar was in Hole. That's. What is happening in this movie? And what is Courtney? I want to know what Courtney Love thinks about this movie.
Look, Courtney Love is... Like, if Courtney Love didn't exist, we would have to create her.
Well, Elizabeth Moss would have created her.
Exactly. Yeah. And because she does exist, she's fertile material for dramatization. You know?
All right, continue.
Anyway, we see her... kind of take this like young trio of rockers under her wing to sort of exploit them.
Little Cara Delevingne.
Cara Delevingne, Ashley Benson, and Dylan Galula. I'm a big Dylan Galula fan. She was Xanthippe on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. She was in First Girl I Loved. She gives eye roll like few others.
She was in Support the Girls.
She doesn't support the girls.
Yeah.
So
Regina Hall. A really great movie with Regina
Hall.
Yes,
it is.
Please go see or watch, however you can
see Support the Girls. I think it's on Hulu. Yeah.
Is it on Hulu now?
I believe
it is. It's fantastic.
So good. Anyway, so once Becky completely crashes and burns, she kind of has to sort of rebuild. And there's a beautiful moment later in the film where her daughter, who we first see as a baby being passed around backstage, is now like older and walking and talking. And Becky plays her song on a piano in one take that is gorgeous. I'm not going to tell you what song it is, but I love when somebody can take a song that you think you never need to hear again, that you think is completely schmaltzy and meaningless, and invest it with such heart that it suddenly means something again. Like, every time I've seen Sandra Bernhard live, she does this.
Yeah, yeah.
She'll take some song that you think is complete nonsense. You've
heard too many times, you think it's maybe even a joke at this point.
Yeah, and she'll just, like, she will take it completely seriously.
Her way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Elizabeth Mott does that in this film. And then in the final sequence, something she has to reunite to perform, because there's like that's the anniversary of the label, and everybody's like, is she gonna make it on stage? Is she gonna like backslide being backstage with the drug people? And she finds this strength not only in her bandmates and in her mother, played by Virginia Madsen, which Madsen is Elizabeth Moss's mom, perfect casting. But in the younger, in all these other singers that she, or you know, female rock musicians that she's had sort of troubling interactions with in the past, they're sort of there for each other. And it's, I think this is a really powerful movie. It does drag you through a lot of bad behavior, but unlike other films from Alex Ross Perry, it also holds out this notion of the possibility of redemption and renewal.
My audible reaction here is not because I think this is a bad film. It's because Elizabeth Moss is so very good.
Yeah.
At portraying this utterly destroyed human being, that it just made me upset. And it's the first hour. It's a 2-hour and 15-minute film, and the first hour.
First hour and a half, really.
Is her making you wish you weren't watching her anymore. It's being in a room with someone that you can't get away from, and you can't negotiate with, and you can't make them see reason.
Does that make this a punk performance?
It makes it a punk performance. It also makes it a performance that, I'm going to say this, if you have ever lived with an addict and it felt like you were trapped, the first 60% of this movie will make you feel that sense of feeling trapped.
Fair enough.
And it's not fun.
No. But it's a testament to what the film is doing.
You have to get through that to get to the more redemptive elements on display. Another Courtney Love thing. This is sort of like the Celebrity Skin era version of Hole, where, you know, the songs have melodies instead of pretty on the inside, where it's all just like, you know.
I like the fake. I love a good fake band song, and there's some good ones in this one.
Well, the first song that they do is a cover of a song by The Only Ones called Another Girl, Another Planet.
Mm.
And
I like the Acre Girls is the name of the band of the three younger. I liked their song a lot.
Yeah. So, and if that's a cover, I don't know what it is. So, but they have a real Josie and the Pussycats kind of vibe, which suits me fine.
Okay.
This is a very good film. I never want to see it again.
Fair enough.
And Elizabeth Moss can kind of do
anything.
Everything. Like, yeah. It's... Look, I remember back when the Mad Men first started, she was still doing commercials.
Hmm.
You know, just anonymous commercials.
Mm-hmm.
There was an Excedrin commercial that ran the first two seasons of Mad Men.
I remember that.
She was in it. And by the end of that Excedrin commercial, I thought, I really hope your headache goes away. Like, I'm so... You've taken me on a journey to Excedrin. So yeah, she's great. I think she just recently gave an interview about her religion.
Did she?
I saw a snippet of something somewhere. She may not have had a sit down with anybody, but there was a quote recently that I saw on the internet from her about it, and she said, "It's complicated."
Oh well,
which feels like code.
Yeah. It's funny. Somebody on when I posted my review on the Wrap on my Facebook page, somebody said, "I love Elizabeth Moss despite her wacky religion," and I said, "Yeah, I feel the same way about Chris Pratt and Marie Osmond too."
Well, yeah,
all religions are wacky. Let's face it. You're all in a cult.
We also saw Wild Nights with Emily.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about that?
Oh, okay. So,
because I'm going to talk about the Make Me movie.
Yes, I suppose you are. Okay, so this is a new film from Madeline Olnick, who I've been a fan of for a while.
This is the first film I've seen by her.
Her previous films are best known on the Queer Film Festival circuit.
And that's right in your
wheelhouse.
Land, because you work with Outfest.
Correct. Yes. So she directed Codependent, Lesbian Space Alien Seek Same. She directed The Foxy Merkins, which I think you would like very much.
Would I?
Yes. But this is totally different. This is a fairly straightforward period piece about Emily Dickinson, but it is trying to sort of uncover the true Emily Dickinson that has been sort of hidden from history and has only in somewhat recent years been surfacing, which is, this is not a reclusive Emily Dickinson. This is not an antisocial Emily Dickinson. This is a full-on lesbian Emily Dickinson who had a lifelong love affair with the woman who married her brother.
Her sister-in-law.
Yeah, with her sister-in-law, Susan.
Yeah.
And this is a movie where the press kit actually comes with historical annotations and footnotes.
Documentation.
And documentation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To show where, like, biographers had erased Susan's name from letters and, you know,
actual literal erasing the name from paper
that through spectrography they've been able to, you know, reconstruct. And it turns out the person who sort of spearheaded the publication of Dickinson's poems after her death and who sort of drove the narrative for a very long time was the mistress of Emily Dickinson's brother, who had an agenda of her own. So in the film, Molly Shannon plays Emily Dickinson, but not giving the kind of Molly Shannon performance you're necessarily expecting.
Right.
And it is this.
At this point, do we think of a Molly Shannon performance as any one thing, though?
I guess
she's
not.
She's been doing so much interesting work.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen
past,
other people,
you know, 10 years or longer even.
Yeah.
That, you know, she is a fascinating person to watch in film and TV now. Like, for me, going all the way back to Year of the Dog.
Oh, well, that's true. You're right.
Yeah.
So Susan Ziegler, who's been in Olnick's previous features, plays Susan. Amy Simetz is the mistress. Brett Gilman plays the publisher of the Atlantic Monthly, who opts not to run any of Dickinson's poems. But they have this fascinating sort of three-hour conversation where clearly she is completely overwhelming him and, like, he has no idea how to respond to her. But she's so starved for, like, intellectual conversation that she just, like, harangues him with questions and, you know, like, wanting to know stuff. You know, in her review on The Wrap, April Wolf, talking about Emily Dickinson.
Regina Bell.
Yes, thank you. Regina Bell.
Famous R&B singer of the 1980s, Regina Bell.
April
reviewed
Wolf.
Reviewed this film for The Wrap.
April Wolf reviewed Wild Nights with Emily, and she cited Drunk History as a parallel.
Absolutely what I was thinking when I was watching the film. I thought, this is Drunk History.
There is occasional, like, this level of art.
Because it looks that cheap.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely, like they are trying for some level of period detail, but, like, you
not
know.
Much.
It's way too sunny
yeah.
for Amherst, Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's things look too new.
Yeah.
Everything's really brightly lit. It's clearly, like, the flimsiest of sets. Right.
But it is this sort of, you know, I find this a really fascinating pairing with, what was the Terrence Davis movie last year?
The one about Emily Dickinson and Cynthia Nixon.
Yes. What anyway, that movie, you know, that movie was a lot, obviously had a lot more money to spend on the, you know, the sets and the costumes and whatnot. But I think it hews more to the version of Dickinson that we've been sold all these years.
A quiet passion.
A quiet passion.
A quiet passion.
That tells you everything you need to know. This movie feels more like it's trying to... Not rewrite history in terms of
no.
something that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Rewrite history in terms of history's been wrong up until now.
Correct and history.
Correct history, exactly. Vindicate it.
Correct the intentionally
misleading
history.
Yeah.
The film, this is not a spoiler to say this, the film ends with the actual sound effects of a person erasing a name on paper.
Yeah.
Again and again. And again, you as the screen goes black, you hear the sound of an eraser on yeah. paper.
And I have to say, that, you know, what a thing, you know, Olnick did this as a stage play for years to really sort of, I think that's how she hammered out a lot of the script before filming. But she will put the words of the poems on screen
yeah.
and having them coming out of characters' mouths in a way that I found really fascinating because I'm not a big poetry person. There was everything I super fell in love with when we had to study it in school. I don't read it on my own.
All right.
This movie kind of brings those words alive in a way that I thought was really fascinating. It reminded me of the movie that I'll be talking about later as my DVD pick in terms of like implementing poetry in a way, in a cinematic way.
May I interrupt you for just one moment?
You may.
You need to pause this recording and go put my dinner in the oven.
Oh, so I do. One moment.
And we are back.
Yes.
It's backwards day here in this house. As the primary...
Cook.
I chose instead to toss that job to you today. Because I can't get enough of the... old-timey Ann Landers recipe for meatloaf that you clipped from a newspaper back in the day.
Yeah.
And it's... I love it so much that I want it as often as I can have it, which turns out to be like every 3 months.
Yeah, I would be willing to make it more often than that.
I know you would be. But, you know, it's red meat.
It's part of the rotation.
It's red meat, and we don't do much of that anymore.
It's true.
But generally, on Sundays, I'm cooking Sunday dinner, and mm-hmm. you're the one cleaning the bathroom, because folks are coming over.
Mm-hmm.
But I did the bathroom cleaning up today.
And spilled Comet everywhere.
And I spilled Comet all over the floor. I had to vacuum it up. It's been a great day.
Anyway, Wild Nights with Emily. I thought it was really good. And it's a very different Amy Simons performance than you'll get in Pet Sematary.
Yeah, I've never seen her be... this weird
arch, maybe is
yeah.
the word.
yeah. It could be funnier, but it is funny throughout.
I think they're aiming for droll more than yeah. like, you know, one-liners or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I know. And it really builds into what it wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that by the end of it, you are fully invested
yes.
in this story and the
legacy
blunt instrument that it wants to use to smash up every lie
yes.
that history is told. Because here's what happens to queer people in history. They get figuratively erased.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to light that, oh, no, this very famous person who did something very... important in culture or politics or literature or art or music or whatever, that they were gay or lesbian or whatever.
Or bisexual.
Like
or...
that this was a queer person. The old guard will say, well, it hardly matters.
Yes.
Why do I need to know about that? And I'll tell you why you need to know about that.
Mm.
Because the experience of being queer in this world is different. And it informs what you do and who you are and how you create the life that you create, including the work that you make.
And there has been this legacy of erasure for centuries.
Yes. So that, you know, you got people in churches every Christmas standing up and singing the Hallelujah chorus. Well, Handel's gay.
How you like that?
Yeah. So, indeed. How do you like that?
This was the conversation I found myself having with a lot of people last year about Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. Where it says, like, do we really need to know, you know, that, you know, Katharine Hepburn was a lesbian or whatever? It's like, well, yeah. Yeah, we do. It's part of the historical record. It's not defaming her. It doesn't diminish her accomplishments. But there's no reason why we should still be living by, like, what the studio PR team wanted you to know in 1944.
Right. So anyway.
So this is
a really interesting film. I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And is it playing in many places? Is it streaming quickly or soon or right now?
I don't know that it's streaming. I don't think it's streaming yet. It's open.
It's only in one theater in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Right now. I think it's opening limited and, you know, making its way around. Keep an eye
on it. All right. And now. It is time to discuss this installment of Make Me, starring me as your tormentor. Make Me is a thing we have done a few times where one of us has been bothering the other one for so long to watch this or that film.
Yes.
And we finally make them sit down and watch the movie. Often it's on DVD or streaming or whatever. And sometimes, if we're lucky, it's playing on a big screen here in our beautiful city of Los Angeles. Yeah.
Previously on Make Me, you made me watch Robert Bresson's O Hussard, Balthazar.
I sure did.
And I made you watch Vera Farmiga's Higher Ground.
Yes. Well, thanks to the release of High Life,
yes,
the new film from Claire Denis,
which we discussed last week.
Yeah. The American Cinematheque here in Los Angeles, at their Arrow Theater location out in Santa Monica,
mm-hmm,
they are doing a mini Claire Denis retrospective. She was in town to do Q&As before screenings, after screenings. She was not at the theater last night because she got sick.
Yes. But she was also doing like Q&As with Robert Pattinson
at the ArcLight for My Life
Landmark or something.
Or wherever. Anyway.
One of our listeners went to the Friday night Q&A wearing the t-shirt with our faces on it.
That's hilarious. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. So, a film called Beau Travail, translated into English, roughly, good work.
Yeah.
Or beautiful work.
Or beautiful labor.
From 1999, is widely considered, critically, to be her greatest film. And it is my favorite of her films. And it's one of my very favorite movies. Like, if you had me make a top 10 or top 20 or whatever, it would be in there. I don't know. It would be an alphabetical list. After O Hussard, Balthazar, which coincidentally begins with the letter A, everything else would be sort of roughly in the same category, I would say. But Beau Travail would be up there, because I really feel that strongly about it. I think it is a masterpiece. It stars Gregoire Collin. It stars Denis Levant. It stars Michel Sumor. In a very loose adaptation of Herman Melville's Billy Budd. Billy Budd was about a sailor who inspires great conflict on a ship because he is too beautiful. He's not only too beautiful, he's charming and gregarious, and everyone loves him, and everyone wants to spend time with him, and everyone wants to be near him, and everyone wants to touch him. And if you don't believe that this is the story of Herman Melville's Billy Budd, go read it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how Emily Dickinson's lesbianism was erased from history? Well, Herman Melville, didn't he have a thing for Walt Whitman? Wasn't that the deal back in the day?
I believe so. Everybody had a thing for Walt Whitman. Bram Stoker wrote him letters.
No, it was Bram Stoker who had a thing for Walt Whitman. That's what I. That's it. Anyway, I don't know if Herman Melville,
Oscar Wilde returned from America,
knew Walt Whitman, or and if they said were writing the at the
kiss,
same time.
The kiss of Walt Whitman is still on my lips.
I'm getting my timeline all screwed up. It was Bram Stoker. Anyway, we don't know. I don't know anything about Herman Melville's private life, but Billy Budd is a gay story.
Yeah.
Watch
the Peter Ustinov movie with young Terrence Stamp sometime.
Please. Young Peter Ustinov.
Well, this is older Peter Ustinov.
Oh, is it? Okay.
He's playing the captain, so, yeah. You know.
I had such a crush on him in We're No Angels.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's standing next to Aldo Ray. You to notice him at all.
Two of them together. Those two together, for sure. Anyway, the Beau Travail, like I said, loosely based on the Billy Budd story.
And in case you missed it, sections of the Benjamin Britten opera will come blaring at you periodically.
Indeed, they will. This is set in Djibouti, and it is about the French Foreign Legion. Under the command of Michel Souvor. Forestier is his name. Not coincidentally, the same actor and the same character from Godard's Le Petit Soldat. He is playing the same person. In Le Petit Soldat, he is in exile from the French military, which makes it perfectly reasonable that he would then become part of the French Foreign Legion, because the French Foreign Legion, historically, was always this place where outcasts went. And so here we have, in this world of outcasts, Denis Levant, who is a...
Master Sergeant.
A Master Sergeant. And the troops... They obey him, but only because he's such a strict sort of martinet. Like he's not nice to anybody. And along comes Gregoire Collin, and everyone in the troop, they're happy with him, with Gregoire Collin around. He barely says a word, so we don't really know if everyone desires him, but we just know that he has an ease to his way of being. And this really, really upsets Denis Levant. He's got his own world set up, and it's very, very micromanaged. And in comes someone who seems not to be escaping something terrible. Like, why is he even here? If anything... It feels like the attraction in this film is, at least among the characters, is between Denis Levant and Michel Souvor. Denis Levant's character looks up to Michel Souvor and actually says things like, I admired him so much in ways that I did not understand. This is about a man in the closet who is frustrated enough by this that he will go out of his way to destroy the person who he feels is upsetting his way of life. There is very little dialogue in this film. You really do have to rely on Claire Denis's visual sense. This is from her cinematographer, Agnès Godard, her editor, a name that I'm now blank on, but it's also a woman. Her co-writer was a man, but largely...
Who is also one of the co-writers of High Life.
A long-time co-writer. Like, he works on everything with her. Jean-Paul Fargo.
Is it Fargo?
Fargo, Fargo. I don't know. I don't. My French is a disaster. So what you have here is a film based almost entirely on visuals and sound and snippets of dialogue, diary entries from the point of view of Levant, after he himself has been drummed out of the Foreign Legion for the crime that he committed against Gregoire Colin. And this film is largely created by women about queer desire between men, and uses as a visual jumping off point a lot of imagery that has become well known to gay male to gay men who pay attention to fashion photography, the uses of male bodies in erotic photography. There's so much calisthenics going on in this movie among people, guys who aren't wearing a lot of clothing, that you begin to wonder, are these really the calisthenics that the French Foreign Legion participate in, or are they the imaginings of a man who is remembering things the way he needs to remember them? It all builds to this, tragic outcome. People die. The end. It's a beautiful movie. Each time I see it, it gives me something more. Not just to look at, but to listen to and to think about. It's painful. It's about, the destruction of your soul when you can't express, yourself. It's about, masculine identity and how it can be ruined so easily. And that's sort of an indictment on, the world and how men are expected to behave with each other versus how they might behave with each other if they were free. I love it. And I made Alonzo watch it yesterday in a movie theater. I had a wonderful time. What do you think about Beau Travail, Alonso?
I went into this movie thinking okay, the bit has always been that you're super enthusiastic about it and I'm not particularly interested. But when the lights went down, I thought, you know what? I'm sure the so many critics we knew were there. This movie gets nothing but accolades. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put all that aside.
It was a who's who of everyone we know.
Yeah.
At that screening yesterday.
Yeah. I'm thinking, I'm putting all that aside. I'm going to be ready to embrace this movie and be like, okay, yes, I see it. I get it. I understand.
Yeah.
This is, yes, what a piece of cinema. And then I saw the movie.
Yes, and?
Oh, my God. Okay, first of all, I know why you love it, because it's got ironing, opera, and men's butts, with three of your favorite things.
All right. Let's set some game rules here. Don't reduce me to men's butts.
Fine. Ironing and opera, then.
Ironing and opera? Sure. Listen, my favorite part is when they're ironing.
The calisthenic stuff, very homoerotic, very, clearly... Denis and her team sat down and watched Olympia.
Yeah, yeah.
They frame and shoot men's bodies in motions the way Leni Riefenstahl does.
Yeah.
But for a movie that is supposed to be loosely based on Billy Budd, that's supposed to be about, unfulfilled queer desire and blah, 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 I didn't feel any of that. Like, the Santin, or the guy that he's supposed to be obsessed with.
Gregoire Collins' character's name is Santin.
Gilles Santin.
Yeah.
Barely exists in this movie. Barely registers. There's, no anything there. There's
an
no
empty space for these other men to project themselves on.
Fine. But it's still... But there's, you never get much of how Denis Levant is really feeling about it, what he's anguished over. It just... I was much more interested in the dynamics of if you were talking about sexually frustrated men in the desert, this movie is nothing on Derek Jarman's Sebastian. Mm. And this to me just felt
another great film.
This to me just felt sterile and dull and long stretches of not much happening and occasional moments of visual flourish, but other parts that were just like, here's a thing. And, you know, you're right.
Here's a thing.
Some of the exercises, I was like, this can't be, like, they're just hugging each other. Uh-huh. Like, this isn't really a thing, is it?
Right.
So, yes, I'm sure some of it is sort of this kind of feverish flashback and stuff. But, like, palpable, repressed homoeroticism has been expressed so well in so many different films. I didn't get any of that here. There was no clamminess to this movie. There's no ache to this movie. And ultimately, I just found it a very frustrating experience because I knew what I was supposed to be in for, and I didn't feel like I was getting any of it. And I just felt like it was a lot of nothing.
I experience it in an entirely opposite way from you because I think this movie aches with loneliness. Yeah. And
this to me felt like the textbook example,
yes,
of the kind of movie that you and I don't agree on.
And the ending, the final scene, which is very well known,
mm-hmm,
where Denis Levant is dancing wildly to Corona's The Rhythm of the Night,
which brings us back to Doe, yes.
Is so moving and so powerful that I'm going to sound like the most pretentious person in the world, but I get like goosebumps watching it.
I know the Goosebumps movies. This is not,
this is it.
This is not this a is Goosebumps movie for me. I went into this really with the intention of like being ready to be like, okay, yes, fine. I was just goofing all this time. But now I've seen this movie, and yes, I see what you're talking about. And I just thought, oh no, this is one of those Dave White movies where I'm just like, no, thank you. And I never cared.
You're not alone, because our friend Chris was with us yesterday.
Mm.
And here is what he said after the movie. Well, after this and that donkey movie you made me watch, I don't think I can trust you anymore.
I liked the donkey movie. That was the first make me.
Listen to me. You just continue to obey. And everything's going to be just fine. We're all going to get along.
Anyway, I don't want to hear about this or Claire Denis from you anymore because I'm done. I did my stint in the Foreign Legion.
No. You still need to see.
No. 35 no,
shots
no, I don't. No, yeah, I do, don't. I don't need to see Nanette Febray and Boney M. I don't need to see Chocolate. I saw Boat Travel, and I'm done.
You saw White Material.
White Material was good because it was Isabelle Huppert.
Only because it's Isabelle Huppert.
Well, she right. makes a lot of things work.
Okay.
And I still stand by High Life. It works. It was, like I said, severely unpleasant, but it's what she wanted it to be, so
right.
Kudos. But yeah, this movie,
it's one of my all-time favorite
You've
films.
Duped me again,
no, it's
Dave
not
White.
A duping. You and I, good news, everybody, we're not getting a divorce.
No.
Although I now have grounds.
I'm just... So I have grounds. No, most juries outside of Cannes would sit through that 90 minutes and be like, ugh, granted, and run.
Good thing you're so cute.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a make me coming up in which I show you something that is genuinely good and that you will genuinely enjoy.
Okay.
As opposed to this,
I'm throwing my
art fart.
I'm throwing my Jennifer Lawrence face at
mm-hmm.
you right now.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for nothing, Dave White. 20 years you've been haranguing me about this stupid
20
movie.
Years. I've been pestering Alonzo Durelde 20 years to watch this movie.
Ugh. P.U.
It's amazing. It is amazing. It is a masterpiece.
No.
And
look, and I know that the critical consensus is on your side, and I looked it up online, and everybody like gushes about this movie, and yada da da da. And I'm sure Robbie, who's still mad at me for not sitting through Tony Erdman again, will tell me what a Philistine I am. Y'all can all go to the deserts with your shirtless friends and leave me out of this. Hated it.
Sorry, coughing.
Love you. Hated it.
We gotta. What's your DVD pick of the week, eh?
Well, going back to Wild Nights with Emily, a movie called Howl from Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman. It is one of their. It's not a documentary, but it's not a documentary. It's about Allen Ginsberg writing Howl and the obscenity trials that followed it. But a big chunk of the movie is given over to a visual depiction of the poem Howl, which I think is really great. And I think is something that I wish more movies would do. And I was reminded of it by Wild Nights with Emily and its use of Dickinson's poems in the process of telling her life story.
Right.
So yeah, Howl.
Well, we got two new streaming services in this house.
That's true.
I'm never leaving this apartment again. y'all thought we were all joking all this time about me being a shut-in? That was a joke, but now it's not a joke. I'm not going anywhere for the rest of my life. I'm just going to watch movies on these two streaming services that we got. We got Ovid.
Yes, Ovid.tv.
O-V-I-D.
Uh-huh.
Now, they just sent that to us, like, as a complimentary.
Yes.
Your film critics, and here
so that
go.
We would have this very conversation.
Well, I'm having this conversation. Oh, so much wonderful stuff on Ovid.
If you wanted to see that 5-hour Japanese film Happy Hour that we've talked about several times, it's streaming.
You want to see Wang Bing's 10-hour Dead Souls? It's on there. this is
also okay. Shorter things.
They have films from Icarus. They have films from
Kim Stim and Women Kim Make Stim Movies.
From Grasshopper.
Bullfrog, Grasshopper.
Love Grasshopper. They've got so much.
Yeah.
And
first run features, I want to say.
First run, I think, as well. So all those awesome little micro distributors that you know, I talk about every time one of their films comes to Los Angeles and plays
for one night.
One place for one night or at a museum or is a week at the music hall on an abbreviated schedule, like impossible to get out to if you've got a weird schedule or job or whatever. That's all in one streaming service. The goosebumps I got from Rhythm of the Night is what I get from just even talking about this. We are so lucky to have it. This is, y'all like art house? This is the art house.
Yeah, this is capital A art house.
This is hardcore art house.
And they have, and like most of these services, there's like a 7-day or a whatever, like free trial. So, you know, give it a whirl. They don't have an app yet.
It's on your laptop. You're going to be watching on your computer.
You couldn't get it on Apple TV, but you can watch it on your laptop. And if you can throw your laptop to your TV, then you're good to go. But yeah, really great set of like art house, foreign docs, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Ovid.tv. And
we got the Criterion Channel.
We
as well.
Sure did.
Now that is on the app. We got the app for that. That's on the Apple TV.
That has an app.
And we got the charter membership rate, which was $90 for a year.
Uh-huh.
Which comes out to $7.50 a month.
Yes.
That's a movie ticket.
That's one,
That's a movie ticket.
In LA, it's half a movie ticket.
Yeah, exactly. So I was so excited.
Yeah.
I sat down the first day, and watched Cleo from 5 to 7 again, because I was going to go on Bibbs and Whitney's
critically acclaimed
podcast and talk about Cleo from 5 to 7. So I watched it that afternoon. I went to Bibbs's apartment that night. We recorded the podcast. And this morning he messaged me and he said, the computer ate the entire podcast. It has been lost to history. Everything we talked about that night is gone. Ta-da. So that's a bummer.
Yes, it's a heartbreak.
But I had the lovely experience of watching Cleo from 5 to 7 again the very next day. I was just kind of browsing. There's a whole chunk on there. Martin Scorsese selects world cinema.
Yes.
Memories of Underdevelopment is on there. A bunch of other stuff. And then one I had never heard of before called Tuki Buki.
Mm-hmm.
And I was immediately attracted to that because it's from Senegal. It's from 1973. And I don't know enough about African cinema. Like
I me could, neither.
I could maybe fill 60 seconds telling you everything I know about African cinema.
Yeah.
And that's a source of professional shame for me. That's a gap in my professional life. Because you want me to talk about the Chilean New Wave? Okay. I can tell you about the Romanian New Wave.
Yeah.
I can tell you about Alexander Sokurov and Tarkovsky and...
Uzbekistan.
And films from Uzbekistan. And I can tell you about the outlier New Wave people like Strobrier and...
Marguerite Duras.
You name somebody. And I could probably, like, do a tight five on them. But I'll go brrr if you ask me about African cinema.
Yeah.
So I thought, all right, I've never heard of this filmmaker. I've never heard of this film. Martin Scorsese seems real into it. I'm going to try it. It is from a filmmaker named Jibril Diop Mambetti.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer with us. He made fewer than a handful of films.
Mm.
He made a handful of films. And spaced few and far between. And this was his first feature, subtitled in English under the name Tuki Buki. It says The Journey of the Hyena. Okay. There's a reference to a hyena once in the film.
Hmm.
A meaningful reference. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. It's about a young man and a young one who are in Dakar, and they want out of Senegal. They are lovers. And they want to get out as quickly as they can. They want to go to Paris. And you hear Josephine Baker singing, Paris, 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 all like through the whole movie. Yeah. Like by the end of the movie, if you don't know that song, you know it by the movie's end.
It's and the California Dreamin' of
Chunking Express. It is exactly. It's like watching
Chunking Express.
Chunking Express and not ever having heard California Dreamin' before. But it's... It is shot clearly. He was influenced by the French New Wave because there is so much stylistically that's, just frenetic. You know, there's like jumpy rhythms and cuts and a montage that ping-pongs back and forth between things that aren't really supposed to be happening together. Sound design that's unusual, elements of fantasy and dreams that come into play. It's incredibly stylish, and here's the most new wavy thing about it. It's about disaffected youth.
Man.
And they want to go, just get away from here. So any place is better than this, is what's in their head.
They want to go to Paris and sell the New York Herald Tribune.
Yeah. I know a lot of people would be confronted with the idea of this movie and say, sounds like homework. It is the opposite of homework. It is always moving. It is never boring. It never stops. It is youthful and fresh and invigorated and angry, but also resigned to certain elements within the characters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I love it so much. Maybe it'll be the next Make Me. When I make you watch something else again.
Maybe.
It might be.
I would be down for that.
But it's thrilling.
Okay.
Tuki Buki, T-O-U-K-I, B-O-U-K-I, get the Sundance, get the Criterion channel.
Mm-hmm. And there it is.
And there it is. Start streaming. Never leave the house again.
And as long as you're not leaving the house, you might as well subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Oh, yeah, that.
Get all of our extra shows.
We have this product that you're listening to right now. It's free. We have other products. They cost money. Would you like to buy them?
Maybe. Sure you would.
If you go to patreon.com/linoleumknife.
No,
patreon.com/linoleumknife. Whatever. Yes. Just go to Patreon, write in Linoleum Knife. You'll get there. And you'll see a video. You'll see all the other shows that we have, all the things that you can get and do and see and participate in. And all it costs is
Your soul.
Your hard-earned cash. We have letters?
We do.
Here's one. This letter is from, as soon as it loads up.
Spin, beach ball, spin!
This is from A. Robin. Last name withheld.
Okay.
Not because this person wants me to withhold the last name, but...
Just because. You know,
yeah, it's a good idea. Dear David Alonso, I was a big fan of Dave's reviews for Movies.com. Well, thank you very much. My treasure of a husband got me Dave's book, Exile in Guyville, as a birthday present.
Even he is before, a treasure.
Even before I realized the book existed, I was a late adopter to podcasts. But I discovered yours by looking Dave up on social media in 2016. We had just moved to Chicago. I had some time on my hands. You two have kept me company as I set up shop in a new community, and that for that I will always be grateful. You are still helpful for keeping me vigilant at the Gene Siskel Film Center and the Music Box Theater, as sometimes movies just come and go, even in the biggest city in the Midwest, and it's easy to miss something really good if you are not paying attention. I'm including a list for you to knife, which may be overbold for my first letter, but so be it. It was particularly interesting. I was particularly interested in your discussion of The Hate U Give, since I had been meaning to read the book for some time and then wasn't sure whether to go ahead and see the movie without reading the novel first. Your discussions of that, as well as A Wrinkle in Time, multiple versions of Little Women, Black Klansman, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and a few other adaptations this year prompted me to assemble a list of the best movies based on books.
Oh, okay.
And probably the only thing I love more than movies is books. Well, then you should see that movie called The Book Shop.
No. No, she shouldn't.
Which is a terrible movie.
She should see Ex Libris.
Ex Libris is a wonderful, beautiful, real film. The Book Shop is a dumb movie that I just really liked watching.
It's very cozy.
Yeah. Number one, adaptation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Number two, The Shining.
Yeah, even if Stephen King doesn't like it, who cares?
Even though it doesn't include the topiaries,
yes,
that move when you are not looking, which are the scariest part of the book.
True.
I've never read the book.
That book scared the crap out of me.
Did it?
I read it as a teenager, yeah. Mm.
Number three, There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, Come on now. That's a...
Don't leave me hanging with that one.
I drink your milkshake.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very loose adaptation, is my understanding. I never read Oil, but you know, it is one. Yeah, fine.
Beau Travail is a very loose adaptation of Billy Budd.
Yeah.
And it is a wonderful adaptation. Number four, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes.
Number five, Wonder Boys.
Yes, I've never read the book, but I like that movie.
Stop for a second to retell a story.
Oh God, no. The junket years.
The first year I lived here, I did film junkets, which are, listen, if you can make it work and become Gray Drake, then do it. There can be only one, but if you are lumpy and grumpy like me, and you don't want to be there, oy. So I did the Wonder Boys junket. Here's the best question that was asked of Tobey Maguire. Now that you're really famous, can you just walk around as Toby?
To which he responded,
when I walk around, it is always as Toby. And I wonder who put that in print. Did anyone put that quote in print? Because there were no cameras in the room.
Right.
It was all the print people.
Yes.
In the piece that I wrote for iFilm, which no longer exists, and all the content has been scrubbed. I put that quote in my piece because I was like, yes, thank you, Tobey Maguire.
It's in the book too, isn't it?
Maybe I put it in the book. I don't know. And then Michael Douglas came in the room. He got his 15 minutes with the 12 of us sitting around the table. And a woman said.
The same person, right?
No, different person. Oh. Or maybe it was the same person. I can't remember. It might have been the same person. But the woman said, you know, in this movie, you're just so disheveled and you're in pajamas and a bathrobe all the time and you look like you haven't showered. Where is my Michael? Andy Jones was sitting next to me and I was looking at him like, is this the job? Is this what our job is? Is it a contest to ask the rock-headedest dumb thing that you can come up with?
That's the thing I always hated the most about junkets. Yeah. There was at least one person at the table that made you regret you had ever gone into this business in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
that made you embarrassed on behalf of all journalists everywhere.
Yeah.
That you wanted to like hand a written apology right. to the interviewee and be like, I'm so sorry that this person exists. Like
the dumbest thing that you heard in that 15 minutes is not the dumbest thing they heard that
This day. Is true.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's still, it's a nightmare.
All right, continuing. Children of Men.
Okay, yeah.
Coraline.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
The Incredible Journey, the 1954 version.
Okay.
Listen, that movie will put you through it.
Mm.
You've seen it, right?
Yeah. I haven't seen the Sally Field one, but I saw the original one.
It's the one where the animals don't talk.
Yes.
It's from 1954. And they filmed, this is in the little, there, some of these have little descriptions after them that I'm sort of not reading. But it says, you can tell they filmed the scene where the cat falls into the river by just throwing the cat into the river. Look, this was before you had little disclaimers in the credits that said no animals were harmed in the making of this film.
I bet you.
Don't even start talking about Milo and
Otis. I was
going to
say, The Incredible Journey animals got off easier than the Milo and Otis
cast. Yeah,
they sure did. Whew.
Anyway, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Which I did finally watch, right? Didn't we? That was a club meeting. Didn't we do that?
To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yes,
yeah, we did.
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Anyway, thank you. This list is 100% knifed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's what happens when you send us a list to be knifed. We tell you how knife it is.
Yes.
This is 100% knifed.
It is indeed.
This next letter is from Alex. I liked Us, the film, Us. Though I honestly guessed the gimmick and twist immediately. Well, aren't you smart?
I've heard that. I've heard that from quite a few
not
folks.
Not me. I didn't get it at all. Until about two-thirds of the way through, when Lupita Nyong'o
explains
like,
it all.
Let me explain. Allow me to explain.
What are you, Grover?
After she explains, I'm like, I don't think I still get it. Like,
Dave needs flashcards. And a yarn diagram.
Spent the rest of the film waiting for it to happen. I was never bored, however, because Winston Duke is sexy, blah, blah, profanity. Nearly every conversation I've heard around the movie has included at least a brief aside for objectifying him, and I am here for it.
Yes.
While I am not directly comparing myself to Mr. Duke, it's fair to say that his character and I are quantitatively the same type. Luckily, I'm gay, and I know where to find my audience. But I can already sense that I'm going to get 20 to 30% more laid this summer thanks to the good work done by that very fine man and his shorts and his lotion. We underrepresented groups often need those opportunity models to break through to the mainstream, and he is out here representing for black men with statement glasses and thick legs in short shorts. I'm sure we'll soon be back to playing Nick Cannon's wingman or the funny guy in the gang who chickens out when people start getting shot. But in this moment, we are sexy, charming daddies who could beat you up but don't really want to. We always were. It's just nice to hear some other folks appreciating it. P.S. My assumption for good, evil Lupita's performance is that her voice box was damaged when she was strangled by evil, good Lupita as a child.
Oh, okay.
That damage can lead to the whispering and trouble swallowing that's symptomatic of throat paralysis. My husband has a less extreme version of the same problem, though for different reasons. Not bad as a clue, for what it's worth.
Hmm.
Alex, you have written the greatest letter of 2019 so far. Thank you very much for that.
If you have not already invested in a Howard sweatshirt to go with the statement glasses...
It's time.
It's cosplay is all the rage.
Last letter is from Jesse. I know Dave doesn't approve of talking in the theater, but during the back 30 of Gloria Bell, I whispered a slow-mo, oh no, out loud to myself when she, spoilers with John Turturro to spoiler location. Honey. Oh my God. I did the same thing. The friend I was with. I turned to him and I was like, no, 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 no. It became a horror movie at that point.
Yeah.
I was like, no, no, leave the house. Leave the
Get
house.
Out.
There's a ghost in the house. You must leave the house. The call is coming from inside the house. Get out.
John Turturro is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. All righty. Well, hey, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Check out...
Please do. And continue listening, please.
Please do. And tell your friends about the show. Check out our many friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney's show, Cancel Too Soon, and critically acclaimed, even though this week's episode got eaten.
Got eaten by the... Look, it went up Thanos's...
It got snapped.
Butt.
It was snaptured. Yeah. So anyway... but they're over at the Schmoes No Network, and check out the Schmoes, of course. Give a listen to... Hmm?
I need to thank Movie John.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Hey, Movie John. J-A-W-N, Movie John.
A zine out of...
I've already told this story on Linoleum Knife and Fork, and I don't know if they listen to that or not.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, here's what's up. Movie John... is a cool zine about movies.
Yes.
I started subscribing to them last year. It's like $5 a year to subscribe to them. They send you these cool zines all about film a couple times a year.
Physical zines.
Physical zines. They're lovely. And I didn't know that they knew who we were. And then out of the blue, they contacted you and said, hey, we want to send you some stuff. And
yeah.
It turned out they just wanted to send us like some Movie John related mm-hmm. merchandise, including some zines. And I was like, wait a second. How do you know who we are? Because I already subscribed to you. And they're like, how do you know who we are? Like, it became this thing where, like, we were already paying attention to each other and we didn't know it.
Funny. And they sent us tasty cakes.
They sent us tasty cakes. Oh, my God. I grew up in the Northeast as a young child. The Northeast where the Drake's
mm-hmm.
cakes were. I'd never eaten a tasty cake before.
It was new to me.
Little Debbie's in the South.
Little Debbie's and Hostess in the South, yeah.
And we had Hostess in the Northeast, too, but...
And Dolly Madison.
And Dolly Madison. But we didn't have Tasty Cake in New Hampshire, which is where I was. Man. Okay, they sent us the peanut butter chocolate Tasty Cakes.
The candy cakes.
Those are pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And this will be a shock to people who know my absolute revulsion.
Your weird tongue.
When it comes to butterscotch. They sent us a butterscotch cake that has... This butterscotch cake bears no relation to anything that you would ever think of as tasting like butterscotch.
It's
more like a brown sugary kind of frosting on top of a Twinkie.
It's like how bacon and sour cream Ruffles are kosher.
Correct.
Because they contain neither bacon nor sour cream.
Right, exactly. So, I have found the butterscotch I love, and it tastes nothing like
and
butterscotch.
And it is not butterscotch, but it's tasty cake.
Well, I could not stop shoving the butterscotch crimpettes into my mouth. They were gone within 36 hours.
So thank you, Movie John. MovieJawn. You can check them out online, subscribe to their magazine.
You should do that.
Yes. And also go listen to anyone with Dennis Hensley, the comics canon, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to us for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us the 5-star review. It's super helpful. We appreciate it. And no one's done it in a while. So if you haven't, now would be a great time to go do that. Thank you very much. You can also leave us positive feedback.
Have we not been getting any 5-star reviews on my
own? We haven't gotten reviews, period.
What's up? What's your problem?
Well, I think, you know.
What's everyone's problem?
People need to get on it.
Get on it. Get into it. 5 stars. Not 4. Don't you come at me with no 4.
You can also leave us stars and thumbs up and all the things at the various places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Spotify and Google Play and CastBox and Podbean. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. He's at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. You can drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast.
Sorry.
At gmail.com. I'm
clicking the power strip.
Yes, you are. Yeah. I wish you wouldn't. Questions or comments, send us lists to be knifed. Anyway, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Thanks
for
listening.
Someone that sent us something and I forgot to thank them, and I'll remember it like 5 minutes from now.
Exactly. But we'll circle back to it one of these days. Maybe all right. Will. Thank you all for listening. Super Gay. That was the other thing. If you are a subscriber to our show, you will also periodically get new episodes of Super Gay, which is a very fun show.
Just in case you're confused by it.
Happening. Yes, why it's popping up in your feed. We don't really have a network per se, but we like the show, and they're friends of ours, and they asked if we could if they could hitch a ride on our feed, and we said yes. So it's a fun conversation from a queer perspective about comics from Johnny Jungle Guts and Professor Extra. Check that out. And until next time.
Goodbye.